Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the lovely Luke Cutforth and special guest, Skylar Baylor.
I'm excited to be here.
This week we're talking about sports science, but first we have a YouTube comment. This one says, "This is fascinating. My son is trans and for a while he lamented his too high for a dude voice. Then he realized he's also gay, so he says his voice is now perfectly appropriate." Can you guess what episode that was from, Luke?
I'm guessing that was on our episode about the gay voice.
It was on our episode about the gay voice, but moving past that, go ahead and comment on YouTube if you want and answer this question. Do you play any sports?
I love tennis.
You love tennis. Skylar, do you play any sports? Do you do any sports? Are you a sporty kind of guy?
Well, I swam in college. I've been swimming for a long time. 18 years of competitive swimming, so yeah, I'd say so.
Wow. Oh, I was really lucky we have you on this episode for sports then.
That's, what a coincidence.
Wow, really good.
Almost as if it was designed that way.
So, we're talking today about the science of trans athletes, which is obviously a contentious issue right now for certain reasons. I'm not sure what those are, but there are definitely reasons out there. So we'll do an episode specifically on the science of trans women and women's sports in the future, since this is a really big topic and we want to do it justice, right? And also, it doesn't seem super appropriate for three guys to sit and talk about what they reckon women should be doing, you know?
To be fair, we have done that before on the podcast. It wasn't very comfortable, but we have done it.
It was in the past, and yep, this is the present. We have improved. So, I mean, first off, what do you know about the laws and the regulations sort of surrounding trans athletes competing in sports?
Well, shall I take this, Skylar? Because you probably know an awful lot more than me. I think that the only thing I've ever heard about is that there's something to do with hormone level testing, where they attempted to try and make something quote unquote fair, and it ended up pushing some cis women out of the women's category, showing just how stupid that form of testing was in the first place. That's all I know. I know that the Olympic Committee tried to create some rules. That's the extent of my knowledge. Skylar, please save me.
Sure, yeah. Well, I could take you through the history. I would say, so we've had the first rules that allowed trans women to compete in the women's category, trans people at all, just rules about trans people, was in 2003, 2004, when the International Olympic Committee met. And at that point, there were hormone regulations and there was also surgery requirements. You had to have your gonads removed, and that was required at the time. That was lifted about a decade later. And hormone requirements stayed put, and those rules more or less worked. What I mean by that is the thing that everybody feared, which is that trans women would somehow dominate the women's category, didn't happen. In fact, we have only ever seen one trans woman ever compete in the women's category in the Olympics ever in the 20 plus years that they've been allowed in that category. So that's sort of the general quick Olympic trajectory. Rules in many different places vary by governing body. They can be restrictive to the point of requiring surgery or just categorical bans altogether. Bans mean nobody can compete who is trans, just on the basis of being trans. And then the most lenient, of course, which is that there's no requirements. There's just saying that you're who you are and getting to play. And then there's lots in between.
Yeah, I think you've given a really great overview. What I've got in front of me here is mostly from World Athletics. So correct me if I'm wrong. As far as I'm aware, up until not too long ago, there were testosterone requirements that were there for all women competing, regardless of whether they were cis or trans. And I think recently, I think this was the 31st of March of 2023, it was changed to only be affecting women who have differences of sexual development. DSD women, we'll be referring to them from here on. Now, they have to have a testosterone level below 2 nanomoles per liter for at least 24 months before competing in an international competition. We'll talk about what that means in a bit. And on top of that, trans women also have, there's also regulations for trans women. I think that's 5 nanomoles per liter. I think it's a little bit higher, but they basically, as far as I'm aware, removed the testosterone requirements for cis women in sort of one fell swoop.
I think all of that's correct as far as I understand. The thing that you didn't say, which is really important, is that it also instated a ban where trans women who have transitioned after Tanner stage 2 or 12 years old, whichever comes first, are banned from competing. You have to have transitioned before 12. So that's a really concerning ban if you consider the fact that in the United States, for example, we've got multiple states banning transition before 18. So it's impossible. It's a categorical ban, pretty much.
It's very much a catch 22. So it's similar in the UK as well, actually. So we've recently had a whole issue with puberty blockers, which is basically one of the main issues that people have with this is going through male puberty. If you've gone through male puberty, that's usually something that will outright, no, you're not allowed to do this. You're not allowed to do this if you've gone through a male puberty. But they're also restricting children from having puberty blockers to stop them from going through the puberty that they don't want to go through. And so it's very much a catch. It's almost a catch 22, as you said, like a categorical ban in everything.
I mean, it's designed that way, right? I think it's important to recognize that it's not like this isn't an accident. Oops.
Oh, no.
Right? we accidentally did it this way. No. And so there's lots of the 12 years old. Also, I've talked to some doctors about this. The 12 years old is a sort of arbitrary number. Like why they chose 12 is interesting because there's nothing that specifically says 12 is the age. Tanner stage 2 is when hormones begin to be flooded throughout the body. And even if you did have access to gender affirming healthcare, at the age of 12, you wouldn't actually have puberty blockers most likely before Tanner stage 2 of puberty. Usually they do it after or right in that stage because there's different requirements for how one actually uses puberty blockers. The other thing that I like to remind people is I encourage us not to say male puberty because that's actually very vague. Testosterone driven puberty is actually far more accurate and also degenders it because many people, I think, who are, for example, trans women, that's not necessarily, they are not male, so they're not going through male puberty. They're going through testosterone-driven puberty. So just a suggestion, I testosterone-driven puberty, estrogen-driven puberty, it's also, like I said, more accurate.
I realize that this is an audio format as well. I do this very often. I realize this is an audio format. When I said male puberty, I was giving the air quotes there. Oh, yeah. My Lord. Yes, thank you very much for anyone that was listening. No, Skylar's absolutely on the money. And Luke, you may have noticed this as well. We're only really talking about regulations for trans women.
Yes.
And what's going on with trans men, Skylar? Like, what's going on there with regards to trans men competing in sports?
Yeah, you know, whenever I talk about trans people in sports, even though I am a trans athlete and a trans man who competed in men's sports, nobody is talking really about my experience for the most part anymore. I think I talked more about it before the world exploded on trans women and women's sports, but most people, when they think about trans athletes, are now focusing on trans women. And this is a pervasive problem, by the way. It's not just in sports. When they think about bathrooms, when they're thinking about drag, when they're thinking about all the other parts of trans people in public, queer people in public, it's mostly focused on anything with women's spaces, right? And you'll notice it's protect women, protect children, protect women's sports, right? And sort of completely ignores the existence of trans men. This is a historical issue, right? We've seen the over-sexualization, hypersexualization of trans women and therefore hypervisibility as well. With trans men, there's sort of a deletion, an erasure. They don't even exist. And both are misogyny, right? Mm. Both is rooted in misogyny and a focus on policing women, on harassing women, and then with trans men, and then with sports specifically, it's about saying, well, anybody assigned female at birth couldn't possibly compete against somebody assigned male at birth, so it just throws out the trans men because we're, quote, not a threat, and then immediately poses trans women as, quote, a threat. So, you know, that's the I think the framework and the context is really important. My experience personally, where people are, they're sort of too, well, yeah, there's two main arguments against trans men in men's sport. The first is that if people know that trans men can take hormones if they'd like and also compete on the men's team, so they take testosterone as I did, then they often will say something like, oh, you're doping, it's unfair, right? So that happens a couple times where people will argue about that, in which point I will say, actually, I had my hormone levels tested as I was required to 2 to 3 times a season, every single season. You have to do that in order to actually take testosterone and compete in the men's category. And when you think about that, although the NCAA does require all other athletes to be randomly tested, none of my teammates were ever tested, right? Mm. So I was tested 2 to 3 times more than they were ever tested.
It's like stop and search. So,
Yeah. And it's also, should be pointed out as well, that trans men aren't the only men that may be taking testosterone.
That's not
an exclusive thing to trans men. And I want to add to what you were saying about sort of trans men being ignored and sort of cast aside. There's also this very transphobic way that trans men are treated by this sort of group of women's rights activists, with the biggest air quotes possible, in that trans men aren't viewed as being trans men. The only way that they're viewed is to be protected from being, you know, sort of misguided into falling down that is into the sort of transgender cult. That is the way that sort of, you know, a lot of these people will end up viewing trans men, basically as, I mean, and I hate to say it, as lost girls.
It's like there's infantilization. An entire book about it. It's like infantilization on the side of the trans men.
Oh, yeah.
And then like automatic assumed predatorization on the part of the trans women.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It ultimately comes down to what I find interesting and incredibly frustrating is that these people are using a guise of feminism to mask their, honestly, outright transphobia. And in doing so, they're just being sexist in themselves, because even if we were to take this view, you know, that this absolutely ridiculous view that trans men are women who have been coerced into transitioning, and you know, they're this and that, right? Even if we take that view, that necessarily places women as being inherently weak, inherently sort of
hysterical. I mean, it's like
hysterical. It's hysteria. It's hysteria, that's
stuff. Yeah.
Inherently susceptible to being coerced into doing something because the masses are doing
they
it.
They just don't understand themselves or the world, and their poor little lost souls.
Well, and even hysteria is a word that is bad, right?
Oh, yeah.
Even hysteria is rooted as sexism in that, like, anybody who was a woman or perceived as a woman who experienced depression or any kind of mental health issues or anger or anything was diagnosed with female hysteria, quote unquote. And they thought that it came from the uterus. And that's why there's a word that's attached, like that's hysterectomy, hysteria. Those are the same roots. So it's important to recognize that even the word hysteria, I don't actually use that word in my general discussion of this was a perfect use of it because it was about sexism, but I don't like to call anything hysterical because it actually is really rooted in misogyny. So I think you're spot on, right? This fight is largely fueled by misogyny and transphobia, and disguised by saying it's feminism. And I think that there's two points that people try to fight trans men with. One is the one about quote doping, which is just easy to share numbers and say no, we're not. We are within an average cis male range. We have to be in order to compete. The second one is that trans men just can't possibly beat cis men, and therein lies the misogyny, right? And so therefore they shouldn't compete because they're just going to lose, right? And that one is also, I competed in a very numerical sport. You either are faster or you're not, since it's very easy to prove and to rank somebody. And I ended up beating 87% and 85% of men in my events.
That's
so
amazing.
There's a very easy, and I'm only one data point, right? And there's other people as well who are trans men who have beat, you know, for example, Chris Mosier, who's beat all men in his event. And then we've got Pat Manuel, who's now undefeated as a professional boxer. So I think it's important to recognize that we actually can beat cis men. And we do.
Yeah. I was going to say this actually, because I was doing a little bit of internet stalking of you before this episode, just whoa.
Excuse me.
Reading a Wikipedia page is perfectly fine, Luke. I was having a look. I wanted to see a little bit more about you, and you've like, yes, one data point. But if the claim is, oh, trans men could never compete with cis men, that's just not true. We know that's not true.
Yeah.
And kind of related to this as well, I mean, there's a few other things I want to mention, so we'll bring it back to those. But first off, The question is, are trans women dominating women's sports?
Well, this is the thing that I found fascinating, sorry, was that when you said that the Olympic Committee have been doing, like, looking at this since the early 2000s, I was like, this is
2003.
This is like in the news cycle, in the popular culture, this is a new thing. Like, oh my gosh,
right.
Where have all these trans people come from? They must have been made trans by TikTok or made trans by each other. They're making each other trans. But this has been like a thing for a much longer time, like, even on a regulatory perspective, and we've not seen an explosion of trans people winning all of the medals or not losing or not winning all the medals. Like, it's absolutely insane to think it's been going on for that long.
The first thing I always ask people when they start to argue with me about trans women and women's sports is I say, please name for me at least three trans women who've won a national or international competition. Most people can't. Most people cannot name three trans women. There are more than three. There are about 20 trans women who have won a national or international competition in the history of recorded sports.
Yeah.
Okay, 20.
I've got the list of them right here in front of me.
Okay, so maybe you could name them. But if you haven't looked it up off the top of your mind, you couldn't name them, right? And most people can. Most people can't even name Leah Thomas, who is the most famous trans woman who's competed in a women's sport. Most people can't name her. And you know how I know? Is because they'll say, what do you think about that swimmer? Or I think she was a swimmer. And they can't even like name her sport. And yet trans women are dominating.
But
if they were dominating,
mad.
You would be able to name. Yes, they know they're mad. They know that.
That's what they know. And what I think is interesting as well. So if we look just through this list of women who, trans women who have won, you know, in national or international sporting competitions, a few of these are in team sports as well. Some of these are in things like darts, you know, darts, something where the only, and I was looking into this, I was trying to make sure.
The epitome of athleticism.
I want to be really fair to everyone involved, and I don't want to be fair to everyone involved, screw turfs. I want to respect the facts. So I was like, okay, let me just see if there's a blind spot that I have that means that, you know, this group of people may be better than that group of people at darts. Something where I would imagine gender, sex is not really a factor. The only thing that comes up is that, and I say this with air quotes, is that men are much better at things that require aiming because their brains are better at it. The idea that men are better with spatial reasoning and blah blah blah, but oh my lord, that is the only reason that people could come up with for why you would separate darts by gender. And ultimately, there are mixed darts competitions. It doesn't actually have any real effect.
I've never thought about the fact that darts is split along gender lines.
Sometimes,
a lot of the time, it's like, that's a weird thing to do.
One of the first things that comes up is, do women stand closer to the darts board playing darts? Yeah.
Do they? I assume not. Sorry, I'm just asking.
No.
This is such a specific question.
Yeah, right. I find it really interesting because especially when you look through this this list of women, yes, they've won, but they've not dominated either, you know. And we'll maybe get to this more later on, but the idea that a trans woman winning one thing one time, or not even winning one thing one time, becoming second or third or beating any cis woman,
or 6,159th, like the trans woman who you know supposedly beat all of these women in the most recent marathon in London. She got 6,159th place, and yet every single newsreel said trans woman beats 14,000 women, negating the fact that there were 20,000 that competed, and she got a participation medal for 6,000th place.
But she beat more cis women than she lost against.
It's true.
She beat more cis women than she lost against. You can't argue against those. It's honestly ridiculous.
Won't somebody think of the 14,000 cis women behind her who didn't run as fast?
It's so interesting to me because I keep saying it's interesting to me, and I don't want to make it seem as though I'm not aware that this is genuinely something that it affects people very deeply. You know, it doesn't need to affect my life. If I wanted to, I could just stop caring about all of this. You know, I could stop looking at it. I could go and live my life. I have that privilege. Other people don't have that privilege. And I want to be clear that when I say I find this interesting, that's not from a point of view where I'm like, oh, this is really interesting. I respect that this is something that deeply affects a number of people and they don't have the privilege to just sort of walk away from it if they choose. But it is interesting to me that, you know, the women that complain about trans women beating them never, ever complain about any other woman beating them, any cis women beating them who are taller than them or are stronger than them or have any other physical advantage over them. It's always trans women having a physical advantage over them, even if that trans woman doesn't have, you know, an apparent advantage over the other cis woman that, you know, beat them. You know, it's very evident that when you look into any of this, that the issue is not about physical, biological, or, again, quotes, sex-based advantage. It's about someone being trans and that being a bit icky for certain people.
A couple major points. The first is that largely the people driving the legislation against these trans women in women's sports are actually men.
Oh, right? Yeah.
So we need to like name that. You said women who are complaining about them. And yes, there are women, but a lot of this is strangely driven by men, of course, cis men, and of course, usually white cis men. And what does that look like? It looks like patriarchy. It looks like white supremacy. It looks like system of oppression. And there are women who are in this fight, of course, cis women, again, largely white cis women. And that also looks like white feminism, which is not really feminism. So I think it's important to recognize the intersectionality of these issues as well. When we think about the history of sports and who's been policed in women's categories, it's been marginalized women. This isn't a new fight either, right? Luke, you named that it's not new that there are trans women in women's sport. It's not new that we have got policing of women's bodies in women's sport, right? You know, we've seen the over-policing of Black women's bodies in women's sport for a long time, and that still happens now with like Serena Williams and Venus Williams being called the quote Williams brothers because they're quote too masculine looking. Simone Biles has experienced the same thing. Sha'Carri Richard has experienced the same thing, right? This is like a consistent issue. So when we think about which women have been easily included into the women's category, it's white women, it's thin women, it's quote feminine women. It's who fits this image of womanhood. And that's where actually in many ways, Corey, you mentioned this doesn't affect you directly. And I appreciate you recognizing the privilege. And I think that transphobia does affect all of us directly, especially if we consider the policing of people's bodies anywhere. And what I've said often is we need to remember that the policing of a trans woman in the women's category is policing of all women in the women's category, because in order to exclude those trans women, you have to know which ones are trans. And therefore, you have to define womanhood in this very, very narrow category and then police anybody who's not there. And we've already seen cis girls being accused of being trans as a result of these new legislation.
Yeah, and then having to go through, I mean, and again, a lot of this comes from, and I want to be clear as well, just quickly, what I was saying, sort of women complaining about this, absolutely understand it is cis men, white cis men primarily pushing this. I'm talking specifically about the athletes who, you know, hop onto this and come out against trans women that have placed higher than them in competition. A lot of this comes from the view of protecting women and girls. And if you're the way that you protect women and girls results in women and girls being subjected to sex testing or being subjected to, you know, changing their hormone balance for an extended period of time. Who are you actually protecting women and girls? I don't think you are.
Well, you can see like the very clear hypocrisy as well, where they'll say like we believe, and some of them have departed from this and now are just calling trans women men. That's also happening. But there are people who are trying to toe this line, and they'll be like, no, I affirm trans women, and I, you know, I see, for example, Leah Thomas as a woman, but we need to protect women in women's sports. And there's immediately like the hypocrisy there where they're implying that, you know, Leah is not a woman. And so I think people also, your point of the fact that people feel sort of quote icky about trans people, that is the driving factor. Absolutely. And no matter how many times they say it's feminism or protecting women or quote, it's just about fairness. It's not. It is about trying to erase trans people. And there's a reason that we have, you know, 474 anti-trans bills in this country, in the US. And also you all have many other trans bills that have nothing to do with sports.
Yeah.
There's a reason we're seeing these in tandem.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's, as you were saying, Luke, that you didn't know that there's been such a long history of trans people in sports. There's been a long history of trans people being in the public eye and being treated, you know, relatively, relatively okay up until recently, where it seemed to have gotten a lot worse. Yes, trans people have been treated horribly, but it's really ramped up. I mean, you can look at articles from in the UK, you know, and articles in the UK about trans people now are overwhelmingly horrible. But from, you know, decades ago, where they were fairly, you know, fairly decent, you know, using the correct name, using the correct pronouns, and just respecting that this is just how someone is.
Yeah, even wider than that, you also see that in terms of like, even just like Harry Styles wearing a dress, right?
Yeah.
When you had David Bowie decades ago, who was absolutely celebrated, and even that like has become like fodder for trying to sow controversy, which is something that's been around for a very long time.
What makes this very apparent as well, and I'm in a TERF group on Facebook. I say it's a TERF group. It's purports itself to be a group where people can have discussions on this. Ultimately, it's TERFs patting each other on the back for being TERFs. Now, there was something that was posted recently saying, oh, Eddie Izzard, you know, is it bad that I feel upset that Eddie Izzard is trans now? You know, like, I really, really respected her as someone who was gender nonconforming, and now she's trans and gender conforming. Now I don't have that anymore. And, you know, okay, look, I understand having someone that is gender nonconforming and looking up to someone that's gender nonconforming, and then finding out that person isn't gender nonconforming, you might feel a sense of loss there. But also,
or you might also recognize that trans people are inherently gender nonconforming if you consider the gender binary being the thing that we're trying to, that people are forcing us to conform to. But you know, that aside,
we got to take baby steps with this law.
Interesting comment.
we got to take baby steps. But you know, the thing is that if you look at, okay, that one individual feeling of, oh, I've lost a role model to some degree, someone that shares my personal experience, that's somewhat understandable. Everything else around it, you know, having that feeling and then the transphobia around it, maybe your feeling isn't coming from the place of, I've lost a role model, and it's more, oh, someone I like is now trans, a thing that I don't like. I feel conflicted. Like, largely, you can see in the way that they talk in the script, that is what it's about.
Ling, is that the ad bell?
I hope so. We don't have any other bells in this room.
Well, I'll tell you what we don't have in this room, Luke. We don't have people who have subscribed to SciGuys on YouTube and followed us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
I actually have done all those things.
I have too. But why don't we tell people about why specifically that is a very cool and interesting thing for them to do?
Well, we want to be everywhere with you all the time. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, we want to be there with you. If you're on Spotify, we want to be there with you. And if you're on YouTube, we want to be there with you. And you probably want us to be there with you too.
Even if you prefer to listen on Spotify and don't really watch us on YouTube all that much, it really helps if you subscribe on every single platform, because it gets us in front of more people, which means it makes it easier to make this show, which you love, right? You love it. You love us, right?
Give me love. Validate my soul.
Subscribe to SciGuys on YouTube and follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify right now.
Heal the deep, deep chasm in my heart.
Let's get back to the show.
But I want to bring it back a little bit more to trans athletes, and specifically trans men. So I want to talk a little bit about Mac Beggs. Do you know about Mac Beggs?
I know nothing about Mac Beggs.
You know nothing about Mac Beggs?
I know nothing about Mac Beggs.
Okay, Skylar, do you know anything about Mac Beggs?
Yes, yeah, Mac's a friend of mine.
Oh, cool,
no
great.
Way!
So, look, Mac was, you may have, you've almost certainly seen him in the news. Did you hear stories about this terrible transgender person who is fighting against girls and beating them in wrestling?
Oh, yeah, I think I heard about this vaguely.
Yeah, basically, Mac,
wow, how dreadful.
He was begging to be allowed to compete against guys in wrestling, and I think it was it Texas?
Texas, yeah. Texas wouldn't let him. They required him to stay in the girls category, and so he was forced to wrestle against girls, and then, of course, the media threw a fit about that, probably largely considering him a trans girl.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the way that the media always, whenever the media wants to be extra, quote, mean to me, they say that they try to say that I'm a woman, and say that I'm a trans woman. It's a fascinating, like, pitting of, anyways, it's when they just get really confused. But yeah, Mac was attacked, and it was a lose-lose, right? He wasn't allowed to compete against the guys, which is what he wanted to do, so he forced him in the girls category, and then people got mad that he was in the girls category.
The hypocrisy there is absolutely stunning.
But what's absolutely insane about this is that it was used as an argument for why trans people shouldn't be allowed, like as in trans women shouldn't be allowed to compete against, you know, cis women, because Mac was dominating these cis girls, despite the fact that Mac isn't a trans woman. Mac is a dude.
And they wanted him in the men's categories. You can watch, if you watch there's a documentary, a great documentary called Changing the Game. And it features Mac and a couple other trans athletes. And you can see the people in the audience, and they're screaming. They want him out. They want him in the men's category. And then somehow that equals like if you want trans men to compete in the men's category, then by default you should want trans women to compete in the women's category.
Absolutely.
But somehow it fueled the opposite.
Yeah,
and which is again just transphobia, not logic or science.
Absolutely. And we'll, speaking of, I'm sure there are people very angry in the comments, as there are whenever we do episodes on these topics, saying you're not talking about science, you blah, 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 this and that. We're going to get to the science in just a sec, don't you worry. But I want to add there, because there was something that you said that you know, hit something in my brain. You were saying that when the media wants to be extra cruel to you, they'll say you're a woman, as in you're a trans woman as well. And that's something that I noticed with a lot of my friends who are trans. At some point, people will start harassing them because they know that they're trans, and they assume, forgive me for the way I'm saying it, they assume that they're trans in the other direction. You know
right.
what I mean?
Yep. As a full 360.
Yeah. So they'll see a trans guy and they'll say, "You'll never be a woman."
Yes.
Great. Yeah. You're good job.
Great.
Good. Well done. Well
they
done.
They transphobic their way into being affirming. It happens often. My comments are almost always filled with have at least one comment that says, "You'll never be a real woman. You're always going to be a man." Especially if I'm talking about trans women of any kind, they think that I'm a trans woman. And it's really based on an incredibly transphobic assumption, which is that they can see my assigned gender. And so because what they see is male, and they perceive me as a man, they perceive me as a cis man, then that equals, then if I say I'm trans, I must then be a trans woman, because the only thing they can see is manhood. Yeah. And it's fascinating that happens. And that happens actually across the board to many different trans people. Yeah. Whatever people perceive, whatever gender they perceive, is a gender they think that we've been assigned. They don't think it's possible we could ever look like something else.
And I think what's interesting about this as well is that it results in... It doesn't just affect trans people. It also ends up affecting cis people in that, oh my lord, in that someone could hear, I've seen this a number of times, someone will see a post, you know, about a trans person engaging in some kind of sporting competition, and they'll say, "This person is clearly not that gender. Blah, blah, blah. Look at everything. You can always tell." And they're talking about a cis woman.
Oh, yeah.
The image is one of a cis woman.
My mum saw this in real life. She was in a bathroom and there was a woman in there who just seemed a little bit masculine. And another lady just started screaming at her, "You can't use this bathroom. You can't use this bathroom. You're a trans woman." And she was a cis woman. But because she's because these people are so primed to try and spot it happening, because they think they can spot it happening, she ended up like hate criming a cis woman into thinking they were a trans woman assigned male, and they were a cis woman, and like it's just God, that was just so mad for her to see that in real life.
It happens everywhere, right? And I think like that's why when people say this doesn't affect me, Corey, I knew what you meant by that, and I appreciate again the privilege you were trying to name. And in a different way, it does affect all of us. It affects people beyond trans people, because these gender boxes is really what we're starting to solidify against. And Luke, you brought up the concept of sort of like gender variance in presentation of wearing dresses now versus like a man wearing a dress now versus a man wearing a dress 30, 40 years ago. We're seeing this hyper rigidization, if you will, I don't know if that's a word, but you know, hyper rigidity of gender categories, gender expression categories, as almost a rejection of sort of trans liberation, if you will, that's hurting everybody, right? Only men can only look this, bring back, quote unquote, bring back manly men. If you look, you know, 300 years ago, manly men wore powdered wigs, makeup, heels, and what's things that looked
they're
a lot like dresses, right?
Yeah. I'm Scottish. We were kilts, man. Those are skirts. They are skirts in a different form.
And that's great. It's just, gender expression is so subjective. So anyways, all I'm trying to say is that there is really this hyper rigidity of gender categories that hurts cis people too. I think really hurts cis people. And actually what a lot of me and my trans friends talk about is that I think cis people who are feeling threatened by trans people, or even just the knowledge that trans people exist, I think there's a piece of them that's feeling jealous. Why do they get to show their authenticity? Why do they get to wear what they want? Why do they get to be who they want when I have to be constrained constrained by these gender boxes. And the answer is, you don't have to be constrained by these gender boxes either. You don't have to be trans to wear whatever the heck you want. Wear what you want. Just like, say what you want. Dress how you want, right? Present yourself how you want. But the world is not allowing that kind of freedom. In fact, it's I think, reducing it.
I want to take back, by the way, saying that it doesn't affect me, because I just remembered that all the time I get comments harassing me for being trans because I've made a video saying, hey, leave trans people alone. Be nice to trans people. Stop being mean. You know, something to that effect.
What could possibly have brought you to make such a video, Corey? It must be the fact that you're trans.
And they're like, oh, it's so obvious that you're like, they're so obvious that you're a trans woman. It's so obvious that you're a trans man. I'm like, is it though? Because I'm neither of those things. Like, it's just very, it's ridiculous that people hate trans people so much that they will attack anyone that is remotely pro-trans with the assumption that they are trans,
yeah.
And they'll lie about, oh, it's so obvious that you're this. And the fact that I get everything under the sun, it's very obvious that it's all bullshit. Like, it's coming from nowhere. I look too feminine and I look too masculine. I've had both of those things.
Well, and it's not coming from nowhere. It's taught to people, right?
Oh, yeah,
it's taught
yeah.
to people. We're like, we're taught to believe that this is man enough, this is not man enough, this is woman enough, this is not woman enough. And we're actually taught that from childhood, right? From when we're very, very little. And so people will try, you know, there's laws banning LGBTQ+ education in schools, saying, oh, we can't talk to kids about gender. We can't talk to kids about sexuality. We do that already, right? This is mommy. This is daddy. This is your sister. These are boys' toys. These are girls' toys, mm-hmm. right? We gender and sexualize kids. Oh, you know, he's going to be a little heartbreaker. She's going to get all the guys, right? We do that from birth, pretty much.
Yeah.
And nobody has a problem with it until it's talking about transness or queerness. So I think we can't forget that either.
Oh, yeah. No, when I say it comes from nowhere, what I mean is that these accusations of, you know, me being this kind of trans person or that kind of trans person, they're not based on anything about my appearance or my physicality, based on the fact that I get everything. Do you know what I mean? You can't pinpoint,
sure.
You can't say, oh yes, well, it's because you actually look this way, because people can't agree on whether I'm a trans
woman
or a trans man.
And that goes back to how gender expression is totally subjective, right? So they're picking out the parts of you that they can attack, basically, that they can put in this box or the other, and use it to their, you know, transphobic narrative.
Absolutely.
Can I take us on a slightly weird, super nerdy tangent that is very relevant to exactly what we're talking about here about boxes and how this affects us in real life?
I don't know if that's really in keeping with the theme of the podcast, but go on.
Do I have your permission?
Yeah.
Thank you. So to bring up the buzzword of the last couple of months, you guys know ChatGPT, right?
Yes, personally.
Yes.
You know, you have friends with ChatGPT? So ChatGPT is based on like this thing called large language models, which are basically like a computer has made a representation of words and the relevant connections between words and the frequency of words and that kind of thing. It's trying to form predictive models. And what's really fascinating to me, this was so interesting to me, specifically with regards to gender and categories and things like this, is that at least with a certain subset of language models, what you can do is you can give it a word and all the words are placed in like, imagine they're in 3D space, right? All the words are like floating around in 3D space. And if you take a word, you can subtract the location of another word and you get a new word, right? So what that looks like, if that doesn't make sense, which it might not, is if you take the word king, right? You get the word king, you subtract the positional value of the word man, and then you add the positional value of the word woman. If you've got a well-balanced language model, you get the word queen.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, if you take the word woof and minus dog and add cat, you get meow. If you take woof and minus dog and add Santa, you get ho, 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 which is hilarious. And what this taught me is that if our minds are forming a map of meaning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, not to quote Jordan Peterson's book, Maps of Meaning, which is nothing about that. If your minds are creating like spatial relationships between words, then of course, like we think that, like, oh, you know, using someone's correct pronouns or using gendered words like actress or actor or nurse being automatically associated as being a woman's job. Mm. Oh, that doesn't really matter. But I think that one of the things we can learn from these spatial relationships between words that we see is that actually those really do have a subconscious impact on the way that we understand the world, because so much of our world is interpreted through language. Mm. And I just found that absolutely mind-blowing, that if you can reach a point where you take the word king and minus the word man or minus the word woman, and you don't automatically get to, like, king and queen can be in roughly the same position, because right now king and queen will be in different positions mm-hmm. in that map. King and queen should be right next to each other. I don't really have a total point to that, but I just find that so fascinating that we can literally see the spatial relationships between words. And I think that will have much more of an impact than we think. And that is a computer nerdy, objective way of saying that actually words do matter.
Oh, yeah.
In a way that's not just, you know, the left going, words matter. This is like, we can see this. We have a model, we've trained it, and this model has seen spatial relationships between things. I just find that really fascinating.
Well, if we talk about pronouns, even then, so as we all know, pronouns are biological, which is why ships are all biological.
Biological women.
Yeah. Yeah, you know. No, but seriously, like, let's if you look at that, pronouns, you know, ships are referred to as she, cars are referred to as she. We use she to refer to so many objects
mm-hmm. that we own.
Yeah, that are owned. And that's the key point that I'm trying to make here, is that, well, the reason that we do that is because of this sort of innate, yeah. not innate, but this very deeply buried thing that is taught to us sort of, I guess, subconsciously and sometimes quite overtly. It's, you know, subliminal, liminal, and superliminally. You know, it's taught to us throughout our lives that, you know, if you use she for something or someone, then they are kind of akin to an object that is owned. And, okay, you could say, oh, Corey, that sounds crazy, blah, blah, blah. But Lucas just demonstrated why that's not, you know, all that crazy. Language very much influences how we view the world. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you can't,
and the relationship is between objects.
Exactly. Like, yeah. Yeah. You can't say language is entirely neutral and separate it from, you know, the meanings that we give to things. It all very much matters, even if it isn't immediately obvious to you mm-hmm. how that matters.
Well, language is literally how, if you think about how you think, most people think in some kind of language. They think with words, they think with sentences, right? They think with voices. And all of that is language based. And, you know, there's even some research that supports that there in certain languages they don't have the word for certain colors, people are less likely to be able to pick out, for example, pink, because there isn't the word for pink, it's just a version of red. Yeah. Same with orange not being a version of yellow or being a version. So language definitely has an impact, you know, again, research wise on how we experience the world. And that's why when people say, well, pronouns are just a word, I say, yes, they are, and they're impactful, right?
Yeah.
And if they are just a word, then use it. Like, it's not that hard. Yeah. If it's just a word, use the right one.
Yeah. I do, you know what? I want to piggyback off what you said, because you're so spot on, and I know a little bit about these color things. Yeah. So, for example, pink and red, we see a difference between pink and red. Other languages don't, you know, it's just red, light red and dark red. Now, light blue and dark blue in Russian are Golubой and Zini. I've pronounced it terribly. Russians, please get angry at me in the comments. Now,
they can't see the video right now, so don't worry. They can't comment, unfortunately. Putin's not letting them.
Not all Russians live in Russia, Luke.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Right. So...
Do you want to just cut that out?
No. Oh. No, I want to embarrass you.
Okay, Russians get angry at me too now. You can get angry at both of us.
No, but Golubой and Zini, pronounced terribly, of course. But they will see a difference between light blues and dark blues because they're different colors to them. And, you know, I did a video on this, God, a while back. So talking about relating color to gender. And, you know, people will say, you know, how many genders are there? And I'll say, well, there's either, you know, as many genders as there are people, or, you know, like, no genders at all. It doesn't really make sense. It doesn't work out because what this is that gender is a category, right? Mm-hmm. And categories necessarily have fuzzy edges, or ignore certain things. There is no way to categorize humans into, you know, distinct and discrete groups.
Yeah.
Yeah, that you know, that take into account absolutely everything. For example, you know, you say, okay, green and blue are two different colors. Okay, now if we look at green and blue, like, you know, a sort of let's say a gradient between the two of them. we go right to the middle of that. Is that color in the middle? Is that green or is it blue? You might say it's turquoise. And I'm like, okay, well, then there's, no, there's another category.
Yeah.
You've had to make another category because you can't. Okay, well, what about in between green and turquoise? Oh, well, that's seafoam. Okay, but what between green and... Like, you can keep on going down until, you know, there's no way to do that. And ultimately, gender is the same thing because we don't all agree on what gender is. Right? Like, my idea of what being a man is going to be different from your idea of what being a man is from your idea. Like, we share the same general ideas, but there are things that don't quite match. And there's differences between cultures, there's differences across time. These categories are man-made and, you know, sort of, I guess, infringing on people's well-being and rights and causing harm based on these categories we made up. It's a bit silly, isn't it?
They're designed to do that as well. Yeah. I mean, I think so. Like the gender binary was that we know today, right? The gender binary we know today that I think oppresses lots of people today comes from Euro colonization. So when European settlers colonized the rest of the world in a lot of places, specifically in all across Africa and all across the Americas, they actually used gender, their concept of gender and the gender binary to destroy societies from within. Mm-hmm. They'd go into indigenous cultures and societies. They say, okay, you all are men, you all are women, and now let's pitch you against each other. Let's say that men are better than women. Let's allow you to dominate women. And that actually fractured societies from within. And they did that all across Africa and all across the Americas. And they did that by also erasing queer people, right? Mm-hmm. Because as soon as you put a gender binary in, it had to also look and act like a gender binary. So there was only then heteronormativity and all of these other factors when in a lot of African societies before colonization, there actually wasn't a hierarchy of gender. There was a hierarchy of age. Mm-hmm. In some language, I think Yoruba, there wasn't even the word for woman. There were just people. And in many indigenous cultures across the world, but specifically in the Americas, there was so much acceptance of a quote third gender or the lack of a gender binary. And these people, even the third gender category, weren't even considered quote trans. They were just considered themselves because nobody was misassigned anything at birth. People were just who they were, which was like mind blowing the first time I learned that, where like there weren't trans people, but not because there weren't people who didn't identify as a trans category like we call today. It was because they weren't misassigned anything at birth. They were just who they were.
Yeah. So last year, actually, for, you know, when we did our sort of Pride Month episodes, Ramon said something really, really similar to this when we were talking about, you know, I think it was The Science of Gay Physicists. I think that's the name of the episode. Don't quote me on it. But, you know, the idea that our concept of queerness and what being LGBT is fairly modern, and it didn't exist. I mean, even if you go back to sort of ancient Greece, right? You know, in studying ancient Greek and in studying Latin, you learn a little bit about those societies, and they didn't have being gay the way that we have being gay today. It was either, as far as I'm aware, I may be wrong, correct me in the comments, but it's a case of being active or passive generally was the thing. And there was so much more to it as well, whereas in being, if you're older, then you have to be active. If you're younger, you have to be passive. It's a whole domination thing. But even the concept of sexual orientation was different, you know, a couple thousand years ago. And we kind of tend to ignore that because it's not useful. And I also want to add in that, you know, when, you know, Europeans, the Brits, you know, love us, we were going and doing some colonization, doing a little bit of colonialism. We also invented race, right? Race was invented as a means of oppressing other people. Before that, you know, in other societies, race did not exist the way that we have it today. We did a whole episode on that. So if you're interested in this, in this sort of conversation, go ahead and check that out.
Ding-a-ling-a-ling. Is that the ad bell?
The ad bell sounds different today. I'm not sure what's up.
Because it's telling us about a different show. It's not telling us about SciGuys. It's telling us about After Dark. After Dark is the show that happens after SciGuys has ended. Do you know anything about it, Luke?
After Dark is a separate show to SciGuys. But you know in SciGuys where we have a conversation, we kind of veer off topic and we kind of need to bring it back on topic because we're doing a topic. But those conversations are also really good in and of themselves. It's a whole show of just that.
You mean it's a whole show of just the good fun bits of SciGuys? Without any of the dirty, boring science?
That's exactly what I'm saying. I hate science.
If you're like Luke and you hate science but love listening to Luke talk, you can go ahead to our Patreon and sign up to After Dark.
Okay, so I kind of want to talk about some science now. We've spoken a lot about this topic, but let's get into some more of the actual science behind it. Now, the reasons that people give, you know, most commonly for trans people not being, you know, eligible to compete with cis people is due to biological advantages. So the idea is that cis men have biological advantages over trans men, and that trans women have biological advantages over cis women. Now, do you know anything about this, either of you, anything about any of these sort of topics? Because there are a lot of things that come into it, but do you know anything about these sort of biological advantages?
The only one I know off the top of my head is there's a bunch of conversations around bone structure or bone density or something like that.
Yes.
It's the only thing I know off the top of my head. Oh, and obviously muscle density, things like that.
Obviously.
Yeah. But that's the only things I really know about.
Yeah. I mean, I'll read what's in front of me, but Skylar, if you've got anything you want to add or you want to jump in and correct me, by all means, please do. So sure. With the bone density there, bones aren't muscles, right? Bones don't sort of contribute to movement in the same way that muscles do. Your bone density, from what I've seen, and there's all of these sources down below, they're not contractile tissue. They don't have a hugely meaningful effect on transferring force. If your bones are dense enough to not be, you know, injured,
yes,
whilst competing, That's about it. Beyond that, it doesn't cause, you know, a lot of differences to create any meaningful advantage.
Shocker.
And as far as I'm aware as well, if that was the case, then black women would have a biological advantage over cis black women would have a biological advantage over cis white
men.
They
have strong bones.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
I mean, you know what I mean? But you don't see that being
Ban
a thing
them.
That is brought up.
Get them out.
Yeah, but I mean, is that on track, Skylar?
Yeah, actually, from what I understand too, and the research I've read, that is accurate. Something to consider as well. So what you said, I think I want to highlight, bone density matters insofar as you don't have osteopenia or osteoporosis, right? So as long as you don't have bones that are more likely to fracture, then as long as you have like decent bone density after that, you have functioning bones. And that's what's valuable. The thing about having high bone density, let's say that, you know, one does have high bone density, with trans women, what people will argue is that, oh, well, they have, you know, bigger bone structures, more bone density and are stronger, blah, blah, blah. The reality actually is that, yes, trans women do have larger frames on average if they've gone through testosterone driven puberty. But they also are going through testosterone suppression in order to compete, which means they have a smaller amount of muscle to power a larger frame. Think about a large car with a small engine. That's actually a disadvantage.
Yeah.
So people don't consider actually the full frame of the science. They just say trans women are taller. But if you've got a taller person with a smaller muscle frame, right, on average, then you actually have a disadvantage.
Yeah. And let me preempt the comments that are coming in to correct you here. First off, I'm sure they'll be saying that women have fragile bird bones. No, I'm joking. No, what they'll be probably
this is also not true.
obviously not true. Yeah, no, what they'll be saying is probably something along the lines of, you know, cis men or anyone that has gone through a testosterone-driven puberty having stronger muscles. Their muscles just being naturally more inherently strong. And I feel like that's something that you were kind of hinting towards, Luke. There.
Well, the one thing, this is off of one video I saw by, what's her name, Hofstadter?
Sabina.
As far as I remember, so tell me if I'm wrong. As far as I remember, she was saying about how trans women didn't lose muscle density as much as trans men gained it.
Okay, so I know this is what you're talking about. I've actually got a video in the description that will basically go through that whole study and talk about the pros and cons and what conclusions we can draw from it. It's from Jangles. He's very good. He actually has, you know, the qualifications to back him up on this. So very much you could trust that he knows what he's talking about. And even if you don't trust him, which you shouldn't just trust him, he's got the sources to back him up as well. So the thing about muscles and muscle mass is that muscle mass itself isn't the most important thing. You know, I mean, if you're a bigger person, you're going to have more muscle because you're bigger. It's about lean body mass, basically the what in your body is not fat. And on top of that, the actual muscle mass and density isn't, you know, the sort of most important thing here, because what has more of an effect is hemoglobin, right? you know, as in, you know what hemoglobin is, right?
Carries all the oxygen.
Exactly.
In the blood.
It's the protein that kind carries oxygen
necessary.
In your blood.
Yeah.
Yeah. And okay, I've got up here in front of me, a 2021 review found that trans women's muscle mass remains high after transitioning, but their levels of hemoglobin, the oxygen-carrying protein in blood, were comparable to cisgender women.
And drops within 120 days of hormone suppression as well.
Mm. Yeah. And this is the thing. So people will be saying, oh, but muscle, more muscles mean stronger, faster. No, because muscle mass isn't necessarily the limiting factor. Mm-hmm. And the picture that you're probably going to be noticing as we go through this episode is that these sort of things that are these accusations that are cast at trans athletes are not based strictly on science and the results of studies or the results of, you know, reputable studies or the results of studies that can actually be applied to athletes. They're picking out little things that feel like they should matter.
Yeah.
And they're not actually looking into whether they have, they sort of confer any significant advantage. For example, if you ever see a study that claims anything about athletes and is looking at the average person, I'm not going to say disregard it,
It's really the thing that people also are missing is that most, if not, 99% of the research that people are talking about when they're talking about excluding trans people. So the citations on many of these rules that are attempting to exclude trans people are not actually studying trans people.
Yeah.
They're studying cisgender people. Mm-hmm. They're studying the differences between cisgender men and cisgender women, which is not relevant to the inclusion of trans women and trans men. Right. Second of all, when the most of the studies that they're studying for trans people are not studying athletes. Yeah. And in those studies, they explicitly say this should not be expanded to athletes because these are not elite athletes. And so there's actually only one really researcher who's studying trans people in sports, specifically in elite sports. And her name is Joanna Harper, and she's also a trans person. Mm-hmm. And her research supports that 1 year of testosterone suppression is enough to mitigate any quote advantages of testosterone. If testosterone is the only thing that creates an, a quote, advantage in sport, which we also know it really isn't. There's been, many studies on elite level. So just elite level, Olympic level athletes, and their testosterone levels are all over the map. Even the cis men, right? The sort of average range for cis men goes from about 200 nanograms per deciliter all the way up to like 945. You are in the UK, so use nanomoles, but just pretend for right now, 200 to 900 or so. And cis men are all over that in the Olympics. So there's, a lot of the research that they're using, like you said, Corey, muscle mass, the person is stronger or whatever. Mm. That's not necessarily true. And by the way, even if somebody is stronger, they might not be better at a sport.
Absolutely,
and I think
yeah.
that's also really important to recognize is that biological differences might not always confer biological advantages.
And the key point that I want to hit on here, because you're so, so correct. The key point I want to hit on is that this survives purely based on what feels right to some people, right? It feels right that being bigger and stronger would mean you're better at sports, right? It feels right that having a larger lung capacity would mean an increased performance because you can get more oxygen in your body. You know, it's VO2 max is the maximum oxygen that you can get in your body. But that's not the bloody limiting factor. The limiting factor is the muscles around the lungs and the heart's ability to basically pump the blood around your body. So having a larger lung capacity, sure, it could have an effect, but it's not the limiting factor, mm-hmm. So just one person having larger...
Even beyond that, I know we're here to talk about the science and biological differences, but when people think about advantages in sport, you know what the biggest advantage in sport? Socioeconomic advantage. Yeah. Access to sport. Yeah. Right? Nobody is fighting tooth and nail. There aren't hundreds of bills trying to create access for people to play sports, but that is a primary limiting factor. And for women and girls and women's sports, there's the Women in Sports Foundation has a report that shows all of the barriers for women in sports. Guess what? Trans women don't appear once on that list. Mm. What does appear is financial disadvantage, not having the funding. 70 to 80% of colleges in the NCAA in the US don't actually even meet Title IX, which is the rule that requires schools to have equal resources for men's and women's sports, mostly financially speaking. Mm-hmm. And 70 to 80% of schools don't even meet that. Mm. Right. And we've got all these people complaining about the one trans woman who competed in the NCAA last year. And I think we need to really understand that, I think the biology is important and we can talk about that. And it also supports the inclusion of trans women. Yeah. If you go beyond that, though, there are so many other factors that are very, very unfair. And people are like, well, we are protecting fairness in sport. Fine. Then make sure that everybody has access to sport. Make sure the 64% of black children in the United States that can't swim learn how to swim, right? and the fact that that's rooted, they don't know how to swim, not because black people can't swim, but because of segregation and slavery, right? The history of not having pools in black neighborhoods, right? And so there's so much here, but I just, when we talk about biology, it's not that I want to ever dismiss biology, because people accuse me that all the time. Oh, Skylar, you're just trying to like erase science. I'm not. I love science. I'm trying to make sure that we understand the complexity of science that goes beyond our physical bodies, because that's actually the limiting factors for most people in sports.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I 100% agree with you. You've pulled a look. You've gone ahead and seen the last section of my notes there. That's absolutely.
This is my job, Skylar. I usually ruin everything.
No, it's not been ruined. It's very important to mention. It's absolutely important to mention. And another thing I want to point out is that people who are, you know, listeners of this podcast might be noticing a lot of parallels between this episode and our anniversary episode where we discussed the science of race. And you might be seeing that, oh, these categories that we've made up to, you know, understand people to some degree aren't necessarily all based in science. And the ideas that, oh, black people are better at sports, black people are better at this, that's based on cultural factors more so than anything else. You know, socioeconomic access to all of these things is honestly more important than pretty much anything else. I mean, yes, we could talk about like height and physicality and whatnot, but we'll get to that in a bit. That's not an issue in sports unless it comes to trans people generally. But I kind of want to go through a few more of these things, you know, just to debunk some of these sort of myths that are being bandied about. You know, I've heard about pelvic width being an issue. Pelvic width.
Oh, dear Lord.
This reminds me of when you get people to try and define gender and sex, and they end up going to like, ah, it is the specific apparatus that you specifically have the potential to produce the gametes of. Like, that's where my bias lies. It's in the gamete production that might possibly happen.
And that's why I test everyone's gametes that I meet. Show me your gametes. Show me your gametes, sir or madam.
It's just like, if you're getting down to like, oh, hang on, the pelvic width backs up my transphobia? Aha!
Yeah, but it doesn't, because pelvic width, there's no evidence to show that pelvic width. I know you're not
fantastic.
Saying this.
Fantastic!
There's no evidence to show that pelvic width has any effect on a performance, but it does feel like it should have an effect on performance, because the pelvis, you know, you've got a lot of bones about there, a lot of joints going in. It's in the sort of center of the body. It's something that you can see differences between, you could generally see difference between cis women and cis men, and so it feels as though that should be something that affects performance to an incredible degree. But
one thing that I've learned, like, that's really, like, it's a simple thing, but what Skylar said earlier about, like, you know, if you have, yes, maybe you might have a bigger skeleton, but then you are also undergoing hormone therapy, which makes your muscles go away. And like, you have to see that you can't take these individual metrics. You have to see it in the round. And like, the evidence is, are all the women's medals going to trans women? No, they're not. Like, we've done the experiment. We can keep doing it, but has that happened? No, it has not happened.
I want to, so what you were saying earlier, Skylar, about testosterone levels themselves not being, you know, the most important thing. Luke, I want to ask you a question.
Oh, yeah.
Why do you think testosterone levels, one person having a higher testosterone level than another person, might not be terribly important?
Because of that thing where you have in androgen insensitivity syndrome?
Yeah, so the idea that I'm trying to touch on here is the fact that not everyone is equally sensitive to testosterone as everyone else, you know? You know, my body may be more sensitive to testosterone than your body.
That's why you're so flippin' swole, Corey.
Thank you, yes. I'm a swole boy, yes. but, you know, I mean, testosterone doesn't have the same effect on everyone. I mean, and if we look at this from a trans perspective as well, you don't see every single trans dude having the exact same changes at the exact same times, you know, when they're on testosterone. You don't see every single dude having the same, you know, having the same dosage either, because it's very much down to how your body processes this hormone.
I know massive jack dudes who can't grow a beard. How does that work?
Do you want to know how it works?
Well, it's a reminder that biological sex is not binary, yeah. right? That there's so many different ways that biological sex comes together. Yeah. And even within these supposed categories, people say, okay, fine, it's not binary. There's, you know, there's male, female, and intersex. Even that isn't comprehensive because even within these categories that people think of as quote male or quote female, even those have diversity. Like you all just mentioned, those secondary sex characteristics, so things like facial hair, breast growth, Adam's apple, hair, you know, hairline and hair look, all of and muscle mass, all of these things, those also exist on spectrums because not everybody has the same amount of facial hair. Not everybody has the same amount of breast growth. Not everybody has the same prominence of Adam's apple. All of these things are also different for different people and a reminder that biological sex is not binary.
And I want to add in as well that we did an episode with Lena Norms, you know, maybe probably a couple months ago at this point. Fantastic episode and lovely person. Go ahead and check that one out. But we were talking about polycystic ovary syndrome, which affects 6 to 12% of U.S. women of reproductive age, apparently, according to the Center of CDC. I don't know why I'm saying the whole name. Yeah. You know what the CDC is, but according to the CDC, 6 to 12% of U.S. women of reproductive age, quoting them directly there. So if you know, up to 10% or more of of women don't align with, you know, what is expected of the female sex, is it really fair to say, ah, yes, women are the ones that have no facial hair and don't have these things, and men are the ones that have these? No, because there is incredible variation. But what happens when we see this variation is we stick a label on it and say, this is the bad one. This is a disease. This is bad. And look, yes, polycystic ovary syndrome can have, you know, other effects, certainly. But the idea that it's not natural for, you know, women to have, you know, let's say, you know, I use this
higher levels of testosterone.
Yeah, high levels of testosterone. And I use this in, like, you know, the biggest air quotes, sort of masculine features or, you know, male secondary sex characteristics, like, you know, some facial hair or whatever. It is perfectly normal. You know, it's there are more people with polycystic ovary syndrome than there are gingers. And you know what? I'm going to put it out there. Gingers aren't normal. I don't think gingers should be competing in sports with everyone else.
I'm a statistical outlier.
I don't exist. I don't know.
I'm non-conforming.
Look, you're either blonde or you're brunette.
No.
Yeah, and that's it.
You're right. I should dye my hair.
You bloody well should.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for being so non-conforming. I was born this way, but they tried to... when I was born, they tried to dye my hair either blonde or brown.
Oh, yeah, but they ended up, like, burning your scalp or something. Yeah. And, like, in, you know, causing lifelong complications because of their choices to make you align with what they wanted you to. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't get that metaphor... Just look up surgeries on intersex children. Anyway, should we get back to the actual topic?
Yes.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's more or less all the advantages that people tend to talk about. I mean, you might see people talking about grip strength. So there's been studies with trans
because women. How we grip things is really the primary way that we play sports, right? Yeah. Grip strength is really the only way.
I do a lot of gripping.
Grip strength is one-to-one with overall strength, and there's no other factors. Look, I'm sorry. There are no other factors that affect grip strength. Hand size? No.
Have you not ever seen women's tennis, Corey? They're always dropping their racket because they can't grip anything. Flying all over the court. Just, it's chaos. People in the crowd get smacked in the face with tennis rackets.
That study, I think, also didn't... They studied them before. There was one... I can't remember if it's that specific one or if it's one that's different, but one of those studies didn't, like, take into account the variable of how much training had been done.
Yeah.
And so they studied the trans women. Like, they got a baseline, and then they trained them, right, for 6 months or whatever, a year, and then they got another line, and they said it didn't decrease enough. You added training.
Yeah.
strengthening during that time, so of course it's going to be mitigated by this. So you need to also, the problem is so many of these studies are massively methodologically flawed, right? Because they're not taking the variables into account that could impact strength and other, you know, output.
Absolutely, yeah. And I want to be clear here, I was very much, because I know some people may not know that I was joking, I was very much joking. Grip strength is like BMI, okay? The reason that we use it is because it's quick and it's easy and it's general. It can be useful to make general statements. BMI, as we've spoken about in an episode before, is a really, really poor way to to measure anything when it comes to anything more individual, right? Or when it comes to specific health. It's just a really easy way to look at someone's height to weight ratio, right? That's what it's useful for. Grip strength, if your hand is bigger, you're going to be more able to grip the testing apparatus, and your grip strength is going to appear artificially better because you're more able to grip the thing, right? Like that, like yeah. Grip strength is, and also your grip strength doesn't necessarily, having a better grip strength doesn't necessarily mean you have a higher overall strength. Yes, they're correlated. I'm not going to say there's no relationship between them at all, but having a higher grip strength doesn't necessitate that you are overall stronger. And as you said, Skylar, as well, being stronger overall doesn't necessarily make you better at all sports.
I mean, I think I could grip the hell out of that little apparatus. Am I going to be better at breaststroke as a result? Like, I really don't think so.
I don't know nothing about swimming.
Well, you never swim like
you
this.
You grip the water,
sure.
Right? You grip it and you cool yourself.
Like, I don't know what grip strength's going to do for me in the pool, but, you know.
I think I know what I'm talking about. I won most improved in swimming lessons when I was about 10 years old. So, you know,
you must be an expert.
I think I am. Yeah. You grip the floaty thing and you kick as hard as you can. So if you can grip harder, you're better at holding the floaty thing.
You did win most improved, which you could have been coming from a very low place.
I was.
Yeah.
I was not good.
Yeah. And you got less bad. Congratulations.
Yeah. They didn't get to keep the trophy though. Couldn't grip onto it. No.
They gave it to you and you just couldn't pick it up.
Oh, no. And that's why I was so bad at swimming. But I also, you know, and we've been talking about the advantages conferred by, and okay, right, I'm going to say this. This is something that comes up. I really hate when people say advantages enjoyed by. I hate that.
They love these advantages.
It winds me up. And I get what, it's just a way that people say things. It doesn't necessarily mean whatever, but I hate it. Anyway, so we've been talking about the advantages conferred by a testosterone-driven puberty, but, you know, this gives the idea that cis men are overwhelmingly better than cis women at every single sport ever. And then you look at, you know, ultra endurance sports or endurance sports, and you see, oh, actually, wait, no, that's not even necessarily the case, right? There are sports are all very varied and very different, right? Not all of them require, you know, the advantages that are conferred by, you know, being bigger or stronger or having more hemoglobin, you know, in your body, right? Not all of them, you know, you absolutely benefit from that, like darts, for example. Like, again, bringing up darts, which, why is that a sport? But like, you'd be the biggest, buffest bloke on the planet.
Snooker.
Billiards as well. Billiards. Yeah. Like, which, like, all of these things, it's like, okay, but are all...
Being taller is good in snooker, to be fair.
Is it?
Yeah.
Because
you have to have, like, at least one full foot on the table. Sorry, I now sound like I'm defending
one full foot
the
on
turf.
Floor, yeah.
Yeah, so that, I suppose, being taller could help. But you can always use the bridge thing, so it probably cancels out.
Yeah, I think
it's
why
fine. You don't pay attention to just one thing at a time.
Yeah, but, I mean, look, those are all of the advantages, right? Generally, it says here as well, in general, cis women have a greater distribution of slow twitch muscle fibers, which are more resistant to fatigue and more suited to endurance. So that's why over shorter distances, you'll tend to see cis men have, you know, better times than cis women. Mm. But over longer distances, that then starts to change a bit as the sort of, you know, short-term advantages mm-hmm. are outweighed by the advantages of having more of those slow twitch muscle fibers. But the only reason I'm bringing this up is so that people understand that it's not just a case of, yes, men are better than women at all, everything, because big, strong, and testosterone, you know, like No, it's not how it works. Sorry.
Well, when we talk about kids sports too, I think one of the things that people really miss is that, you know, we've been sitting here and talking about elite level sports. Well, maybe the listeners don't know that. So if you don't know that, we are talking about elite level sports for adults for the most part, right? I think it's super important for us to recognize that, because when we're talking about kids, where people still believe that, quote, boys are better than girls at sports, we have to recognize that that is just misogyny. There is no biological anything that supports that girls are worse at sports than boys, except for the belief that boys should be playing sports and girls should be at home learning to sew, right?
Yeah.
And in fact, because of the way that misogyny works, in some sports for youth, the girls are actually overwhelmingly better than boys at sports because they've been socialized to pay attention and to follow the rules and to actually play their sport as opposed to not. So for example, in girls in swimming, the cut times, the qualifying times for advanced level meets when you're 8 and under and 9-10, the cut times for girls are faster than the cut times for boys, proving, and the records are also faster usually for girls side than boys side before they're 8. Again, why? Because girls are sitting and paying attention and actually doing what they're supposed to do because they're told to, whereas boys will be boys. That's okay. He won't pay attention, whatever, right? And that switches when puberty begins, yes, because puberty begins and there's this release of testosterone for people who have functioning testes and functioning androgen receptors. But all of this is to say that this belief of like girls are worse at sports than boys will always be better is all based in misogyny.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to bring up the benefit of youth sports as well, because the idea is, you know, well, just keep trans kids out. The idea is essentially just to keep trans kids out of sports, right? That's the solution here, right? That these people are offering. And that's, again, just transphobia. You can't exclude kids from sports and not recognize, you know, the benefits of youth sports. I've got some information from a report from the Presidential Council on Sports, Fitness and Nutrition. And this is from, I think, 2020. Participating in sports is associated with lower rates of anxiety and depression, lower amounts of stress, higher self-esteem and confidence, reduced risk of suicide, less substance abuse and fewer risky behaviors, increased cognitive performance, increased creativity, greater enjoyment of all forms of physical activity, and improved psychological and emotional well-being for individuals with disabilities, and finally, increased life satisfaction. If you are restricting a group of people from sports for no reason other than you find them a bit icky, you're restricting them from all of these benefits as well, which is incredibly harmful, especially to, you know, a child who is developing and just beginning to go through the world.
Especially when the people you're specifically kicking out from those sports are also more likely to experience low mood and anxiety and all those other bad things that you listed there.
And can I just, I want to bring up some stories from me being a butty little boy in my school.
Butty? What's a butty little boy?
Butter little boy.
Oh, butter little boy.
Butter little boy.
Okay.
When I was a little boy in school, okay, not that little boy, when I was in high school, right? So, you know, we were playing hockey and yeah, the girls have been playing hockey for way longer than the boys, but the girls come to play with the boys at one point and I was terrified. I swear to God, they were so bloody good. Like there are more things at play than just being bigger or whatever. Also, training comes into it. That's something that people don't pay attention to either. Training is a huge factor.
Even recently, there was a tweet that by a professional, I think it was tennis player, Megan Kelly, and she tweeted, I'm begging any man to waltz into the women's category, declare yourself trans and win to prove all of this to be a farce. As soon as somebody just wins Wimbledon, we can prove that this is ridiculous. And I made a video in response reminding us that actually you just can't pick a random Joe Schmo off the street and put him in the court with Serena Williams and expect him to win. He's not going to. Like, people are completely forgetting, again, misogynistically, and that's why it's bonkers that this woman is tweeting this. Like, the training that women undergo, cis or trans, is not negligible. Yeah. Right? Elite level athletes are elite level athletes, not because they have some biological advantage, though that may be part of their makeup. They're good because they trained to be good.
Yeah, and also, you say, you know, some random person off the street with, you know, Serena Williams, you take a pretty good tennis player of any gender and you put them up against Serena Williams, they're losing.
Yeah, there's actually a specific, it's funny that you say Serena Williams or tennis in general, because I think there was specifically a poll of like how many like just random blokes believed they could like win a game against, or win like at least a point against Serena Williams.
Like, no chance.
Even just like a point, let alone a game or an entire set or an entire match. And they, it was like, I'm not going to give you the number, but it was like, if I say it's like 30% or 40% reckon they could win a point against Serena, it's hilarious.
So
it's like
ridiculous.
That great poll of like what percentage of American men think they could beat a bear in a fight or something like that.
Oh, 1 in 8 men. Look. 1 in 8 men think that they could take a point off Serena Williams in a tennis match.
I've seen Serena Williams live, and there is absolutely no way. She's incredible.
Yeah, no chance.
And there is misogyny in action. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, how many of those men would say, oh yeah, I can take a point off Rafael Nadal?
Not a single one. Yeah. No, and, you know, I think we're kind of getting on to the topic of fairness in sport, because a lot of this we've been speaking about, you know, it being about protecting women and girls, but also protecting fairness in sport. But sport isn't fair. Like, realistically, sport isn't fair. And you're saying, you know, training is a massive thing. Yes, training is absolutely a massive thing, but no amount of training is going to make me better than Michael Phelps, because my arm span is not bigger than my height in the same way that his is, right? Like, I can train as much as I want, but I'm not going to have the advantage that he has. I can train as much as I want at basketball, but I'm not going to be as good at blocking as what's his name, Manute Bol, right? He was 7'7" tall, and he was one of the best shot blockers in NBA history, which. Not to ignore the importance of training, like, absolutely training is hugely important here, but he's gonna have an advantage over me at blocking shots because he's 7'7" and I'm 6'0". You know, like, I'm not gonna be able to block an NBA player as well as a dude that is towering above them. Like, we are okay with biological advantages in sport, you know, and this is taking the view that even if trans people had a biological advantage in sports, which there's not really any evidence to show that they do, and that's both trans men and trans women. Let's say trans men had a biological advantage because they're taking testosterone, right? They're doping, as people have accused you of, right? Like, again, air quotes, right? Even if that was the case, we're fine with people having biological advantages. We're fine with that. We're perfectly okay with that.
Especially in the men's category.
Yeah, we're totally fine with that. Like, do we have divisions based on height? Why don't we have short person basketball, yeah, right? Why can't people under 6 foot have their own basketball league, huh?
Yeah, please, that'd be great.
No, exactly.
I'd love a basketball league of under 6 foot people like me.
Why? I'm bad at darts. Why can't there be a darts league for me?
Short arm darts, because you're further from the dartboard.
Okay.
Okay. That's true. That's true.
Sure. But again, my point is that, like, why is it that we focus on, you know, fairness in sport only when it comes to trans people?
Yeah, it's across these very specific arbitrary category we've picked, mm-hmm, and not like height or muscle density, other than in specific sports like boxing, I think, has like weight categories, doesn't it?
But, yeah.
But no other sports do.
I mean, I think the thing to highlight, right, sports are inherently unfair, and they're created to be that way, and they are that way, and they depend on being that way.
Absolutely.
Right? If everybody had the same body with the same brain and performed the same way, we wouldn't have sports. We would have everybody doing the same thing, right? Yeah. We'd have like a factory assembly line or something. So I think, like, we need to understand that actually sports are inherently unfair. People do have advantages. The question is not, are sports unfair, or are there advantages, or does this particular category have an advantage? The question is there meaningful competition? Is this difference grounds for disqualification? That's the question. Because yes, sports are unfair. Yes, people have advantages. Those are unequivocal, right? And maybe trans people play into that. There's not a lot of research, like we've already said, that supports that trans women specifically have some sort of biological advantage. In fact, the review of all the research that, you know, taken all together says that trans women have no clear advantage, especially those who have undergone testosterone suppression. But that aside, even if you, like you said, we have that advantage, we need to consider not is it unfair, because there are inherently unfairnesses in sports, or is there an advantage, because there's also inherent advantages in sports. We need to consider, can there be meaningful competition? Is there something that's grounds for disqualification? And the answer for trans people is absolutely not, that we can include us. There isn't grounds for disqualification.
And, you know, I was going to say, look, you hit on this point in the middle of the podcast, or up at the top of the podcast, when you said, oh, you know, are trans women winning all of these competitions? Are trans men losing all of these? No, they're not. So the experiment has been done, as you've said. Yeah, no, there is evidently meaningful competition.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, if you're someone in the comments getting angry at a trans woman for having won silver, like a silver medal,
which has never happened.
By the way. Oh, sorry.
Trans women that have not an Olympic silver medal.
Not an Olympic silver medal. Just in general. Coming second place.
But to be clear, for listeners, there's never been a trans woman that has won a single Olympic medal ever.
That's pretty telling.
But they're still dominating sports, right?
Mm. There's one trans woman who's competed in the women's category in the Olympics, and unfortunately she failed her lift and didn't advance to the next round and did not win any medals at all.
Yeah, so Laurel Hubbard
is the woman I'm talking about, yeah.
Yeah, so World Masters Games title in 2017, she won a silver in the World Championships, right? That's there. People were complaining about that. Now, I'm sorry, but how is there not meaningful competition if she didn't win.
Yeah.
It's still competition. Not to be rude, but like, she didn't win, so clearly, unless you're saying, oh, well, she didn't try, she just didn't put her whole heart into
it. They've actually researched that, though. They have researched that trans women are trying, because people have accused the research itself, and there's a research actually function to see how much air you're intaking and outtaking, and it is a measure of how hard you're trying, because you need to be able to, you know, max out essentially that, and it shows that trans women were at all times trying their hardest in this research study. So you can't actually include that.
I'm glad we tested that one, because, you know, I was sitting there on the fence.
Also, why would you go through, like, on a humanity level, why would you go through? I mean, people always say, oh, I'm like, well, what about men who are going to pretend to be women in order to win women's sports? To which I first say, you have no idea how toxic masculinity works.
Yeah.
Because what man who is insecure is going to think he's going to improve his ego by competing in women's sports and pretending to be a woman and being ridiculed for his pretending to be a woman and going through years of testosterone suppression in order to, quote, pretend to be a woman, right? This is not going to happen. But even if it did, you'd be afraid of men, cis men, toxic cis men, and not trans women.
Yeah.
So there's so many problems with all that. I want to preempt a comment that I know is going to be there. People are going to say, no, but there is that swimmer, Thomas, they mean, who won all those medals, who broke all those records, who shattered everything, who dominated. And people don't know the facts about Leah Thomas. So I want to make sure we have those out there. Leah has not broken a single national record. She did not break an NCAA record. She did not break an American record. And she never competed in the Olympics and therefore did not break an Olympic record. She's never broken any world records. And I think I already said American record, but just to say it again, she did not break any American records. The meet that people are talking about that where she, quote, shattered records was a casual in-season meet at a random pool, somewhere in like upstate New York or something, and she broke the local meet record, which isn't that big of a deal. And I shouldn't have to say something's not a big deal in order to just like prove that Leah's, you know, inclusion is fair. But I want to make sure that people understand from the swimming world, that was not this like amazingly huge deal. It was one local record. Okay. At a random in-season invitational later. Okay. When Leah swam at NCAA championships, which is the thing that had a ton of protests. And I was at that meet. I watched it happen. She got a first place. She got a fifth place and she got an eighth place. Talk about meaningful competition, right? The first place medal that she won, she won by a couple seconds, which is actually not that like a large amount in the 500 freestyle. Consider the fact that multiple other women won their shorter races by the same amount of time. So by percentage, that's a way larger amount. And 27 records were broken at NCAA championships last year. 27 records were broken and Leah broke exactly zero.
Do you want a microphone? Can you drop your microphone just there, please?
Well, and wait, let me add this, though. So 27 records broken. Leah broke exactly zero. 18 of those 27 records, so way more than half, 18 of those 27 records were broken by Kate Douglas, who is not trans. She's a cis woman. But 18 of those records are broken, and nobody was panicking about her dominating. Did she dominate? Absolutely. She did dominate. Clearly.
I see what you're saying.
Great. Good for her, right?
Kate.
So I think it's
ban Kate. Yes, that's the new hill we'll all die on.
No, not just Kate. No more Kates in swimming competitions, okay? Because Kate's clearly Kate. Anyone called Kate, Luke.
Okay.
Anyone called Kate. Yep. If your name is Kate, no swimming for you anymore. I'm sorry, because one Kate did really
clearly
good one
you
time.
Dominate, right? Well, and she did so again this year too, which is amazing. She's an amazing swimmer, and nobody was like was freaking out about her. And I think we really have to understand that, because when I so the Leah is what people ask me about every day. Like I get a question about Leah. What about that swimmer? Especially when I say no, trans people have dominated. They immediately say, "What about Leah? What about did she dominated?" And they're wrong. They're flat out wrong. And all of the reports negate what I say. They say the opposite. Oh, Leah Thomas shatters records. Leah Thomas Thomas, you know, dominated, whatever. And that's just not true. I mean, getting a first place, a fifth place, and an eighth place is not dominating. Even the race that she won, like I said, she broke no records. She actually, one of her competitors would have beat her if her competitor went her best time. Mm. And Leah wouldn't have won 9 out of the 12 years prior or something like that. Like, her time wasn't even that groundbreaking. She was almost 10 seconds behind the American record, which is a massive amount in swimming. That's almost a whole pool length. So people just don't know the facts. They don't. And they're being lied to. And I think that's really important as we have these conversations. Yes, all of the biology is important, and the science and the studies are important. But what's even more important is the amount of propaganda that's out there.
Oh, yeah.
Right? The amount of lies that are twisting the general public into believing that this is unfair. And so when people start, I want to add this in because I think it's... I think there's a lot more sort of like social conversations to be having that are actually not about all these facts are important. But beyond that, what we actually have to reckon with in order for more people to understand that inclusion is important is that feeling people have that, oh, that knee jerk reaction of like, this is unfair. Like, I know I'm angry and I don't really know why. Mm. We actually have to invite that in and talk about that.
Yeah.
Because a lot of that is fueled by lies. Right, just straight up lies. So some people I have conversations with, and all they need is really to be told the facts, and they're like, "Oh, I didn't realize I was lied to." Okay, cool. Well, now I don't have a problem. But yeah. Then there's a larger amount of people that get stuck still because they've got this feeling that's really been instilled in them since they were a kid. But it's unfair. But it's unfair. But it's unfair. And that's where we really need to. Those are the conversations I really want to have with people. Is once we've gone on through all the facts, you still have this feeling. Why? Right? Can we dig into that?
And to those people, we say, facts don't care about your feelings.
But seriously, yeah. I think the difficulty, though, is that...
their feelings don't care about the facts.
That's it.
Yes. And that's the problem.
Yes, yes.
People have feelings, okay? And you know what? Everyone has feelings, right? We all have feelings. And I'm not going to lie. Yes, you can see a group of people that you've never seen before. It's new to you. It challenges what you think you know to be true about the world. And I'm not going to lie. It is perfectly normal to feel a little bit confused about that. A little bit like, oh, what is this? The issue is not in having an initial feeling of I'm confused. It's not turning inwards and thinking, well, what am I doing wrong? What can I change about myself? What can I change about my mindset or my worldview? The problem arises when you then say, okay, well, my worldview is correct and these people are wrong.
Yeah.
And this doesn't just apply to trans people. This applies to, you know, LGBT people as a whole. It applies to, like, you know, people of other religions. It applies to so many different areas of life. People will have, and I said this earlier and I say it often, people have an icky feeling about something. And they'll take that icky feeling as being something that it's coming from a genuine source, as opposed to them just having a character flaw that they need to deal with. And as I said, instead of dealing with that character flaw, instead of looking inwards, instead of thinking, oh, well, how can I, like, what is it that I'm doing that's making me in the wrong? They've decided, ah, yes, the reason that I'm having this icky feeling, the person who's in the wrong is the person that's making me feel icky. Mm-hmm. Need to stop them from doing that.
I would challenge it also even beyond like right and wrong, though I don't disagree with that characterization, and have people understand that it's not about being right or wrong, in my opinion. If you have these feelings, it makes sense. And actually, when I sit down one-on-one or in my groups or my workshops that I host, is I say, if you have feelings, that makes so much sense. Mm. Of course you have these feelings, right? We are all raised in a very transphobic, racist, misogynist, sexist, ableist, Islamophobic, anti-Semitic, all these things, right? We're all raised in this world. And so if you have these biases, of course you have these biases.
Yeah.
And let's actually stop trying to say, I'm not racist, I'm not transphobic, and actually say, of course I'm transphobic, of course I'm racist, because that's the world I live in. Can I actually, and to use your word, can I actually not see it as a character flaw, but an internalization of the external world that I live in? And once I see that, actually, there's a lot more space to stop shaming myself. And the reason I say it this way is because I've seen people use the shame they feel about whatever bias they have to dig deeper into their bias because they feel ashamed of it. They don't want to feel that. And so they say, I must be right.
Yeah.
Actually, that shame you feel, let's let go of that. Of course you have these biases. Of course you think X, Y, and Z things about queer and trans people, about black people, about women, because you were taught to feel that way. You were taught to have these biases. Can you say, yeah, I have these biases, and now what, right? Can I actually turn outwards and look at the world that I live in and recognize that this is the world that I live in that has taught me these things? And can I act in radical defiance of those belief systems? Can I integrate facts instead of feelings? Can I care for my feelings and say, gosh, it makes a lot of sense you feel this way, and maybe I shouldn't have those feelings inform my actions?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, look, this is something that I've spoken about on the podcast, I think, a couple times before. I want to put my hands up and say I was absolutely transphobic. When I first found out about trans people existing, yes, I was transphobic. Definitely. I've not been a perfect little person for my entire life. I'm still not a perfect little person. We're getting there. Almost. Gonna be perfect. So soon. I can feel it. So close. I can taste it. But like, yeah, I was homophobic as well. I distinctly remember saying to someone I knew that said they were bi, I was like, oh yeah, because you're greedy. You see a cake and you're like, oh, should I have this cake or that? You have the whole cake. That wasn't a very nice thing to say. That was a kind of biphobic thing to say. I'm bi myself. Whoops. Like, the thing is that, like, as you're saying, we're all just programmed or, you know, conditioned into having these underlying beliefs. And yeah, you're going to have them. Stop caring about being racist or being transphobic, like, as though it's an inherently bad thing about you. Yes, it's bad to act upon those things, and it's bad to sort of, you know, encourage those things and to not, you know, actively try and sort those things out within yourself. But saying something that is you know, transphobic or racist one time without realizing, you know, the full ramifications of it, or thinking, having a thought process, or, you know, having an idea in your head that is bigoted in some way without really fully understanding why it is, isn't really the problem in and of itself. Like, if I'm going to be honest, prejudice on its own isn't really the issue, you know, because everyone has prejudices to some degree. It's acting on it and not actively trying to root out the cause of it and trying to undo it. It's when you start to justify your own prejudice, that's when you start having issues, because I'm prejudiced against things. I have been, and I'm less prejudiced against things that I, you know, that I had issues with before. It's a process. You don't ever become not racist. You don't ever become not sexist. You just become less those things, or more, or better at spotting them, or better at understanding where, yeah, more aware. You become more woke, basically, right? that's the thing there, right? Like, it's utterly ridiculous, I think, the point that we've gotten to, where things have become so volatile, and people, you know, people are hiding behind feminism to sort of justify their transphobia. And ultimately, this would all be a lot easier if they just accepted, hey, I feel these feelings towards this group of people, and it makes sense that I feel these feelings. Let me figure out why and what the actual root cause of it is, right? And when I say it makes sense that people feel these feelings, I'm not saying that TERFs hating trans people makes sense. But if we look at, say, you know, Queen TERF J.K. Rowling's explanation for why she was transphobic when she wrote her whole essay, it you can understand the thought process behind that, where she went through a lot of abuse and she's now scared of this group of people. And the issue is that she sees trans women as being a part of that group of people. And instead of, you know, rooting out the cause of that fear, of that feeling, and dealing with it head on, she just dug in deeper. And now she's gone from saying, I'll stand with you if anyone tries to infringe upon your rights, to saying, you know, Posey Parker's all right.
I will infringe upon your, yeah.
Yeah.
She's, you know, just saying she's going to infringe on the rights. Yeah.
So, she going to march against herself? Or how does that work? You know, like, is she going to be infringing on the rights and marching against the rights? Who knows? But yeah, not like, I mean, having a negative feeling is normal. You just need to have this sort of introspection to deal with those feelings in a way that doesn't harm other people. Just because you feel like someone, like something is, you know, infringing upon you, doesn't necessarily mean that's the case, you know? That's not necessarily true.
I think the shortest way to say it, right, is if you have, to use your word, an icky feeling about someone, the question shouldn't be what's wrong with them, right? What about them makes me feel icky? It's why do I feel icky, right? What is contributing to this feeling in me? And I don't know if the question is what's wrong with me so much it is what about this makes me feel icky? Why do I have that feeling? And can I actually, because the only person I can control is me, can I figure out where it's coming from and shift out of that, right? Can I not actually put that onus on somebody else, because it's actually not their responsibility to not make me feel icky if they're not doing anything wrong? And that's something I think when people have issues with me as a trans person, I want to ask them, what's up with you, right? What's contributing to you feeling that way? I've experienced lots of men saying things to me, well, if you can just be a man, then what does that mean about my manhood? And my question is, what does it mean about your manhood, right? Ask yourself that question. What does it mean about yours? Because really, the answer should be nothing. But if it means something to you, then that's something for you to really think about. Does me being a man mean that you're less of a man to you? That's a big issue for you. That makes sense that you're feeling really disrupted right now. Then can you ask yourself why? Can you dig into that? Is there something that you can find out about yourself? Can you learn more about you through this questioning instead of putting me down?
Yes, this is a very good place to end, I think. Fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think there's just one thing left to do.
Oh, yes, there is.
The quickfire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. Trans People in Sports Edition.
So the rules of the quickfire quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after a finished answer the question wins. What do they win, Luke?
A medal that they hopefully are able to hold.
Oh my god.
Based on their grip strength.
And Luke, what is your buzzer?
Splash.
And Skylar, what is your buzzer?
Buzz.
Great buzzer.
And my question for you is, how tall was the best shot blocker of the NBA?
Buzz.
Splash.
Skylar, I think you got it.
7'7".
Ding, ding, ding. That is correct. Well done, Skylar. Thank you very much for joining us. Is there anything you'd like to say to everyone before we go?
Well, I appreciate you all having me here. Thanks for having me on the show. I think that the number one thing I want people to take away from this episode is, yes, the facts and science are really important. They support trans athletes. But beyond that, if you still feel negatively, can you look inward? Can you hold that feeling and also integrate these facts at the same time? Because trans people do not threaten sports, transphobia does.
Well, that is all from us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons, with a very special thank you to executive producers Dinito and Glitchrabbit. And thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe to new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com. SciGuysPod.
@gmail.com. You can follow me at NotCore everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cutforth everywhere.
You can follow me at Pink Manta Ray at most everywhere.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Take care.